Welcome to Educators to Educators. I'm Carrie Conover, and this is Episode 9, Resilience in Children. If this is your first time listening to E2E Podcast, thank you for joining us. And to my faithful listeners, thank you for returning. The format of Educators to Educators is to discuss one topic related to education and children. Within that one broader topic, we will focus on three areas for discussion. Today, I've invited Dr. Sarita Bakuni, a well-respected psychologist and expert on emotional intelligence, to join us to discuss resilience in children. We will start off by talking about reality testing and the way in which children and adults perceive situations they encounter. We will then move on to discuss stress management and how humans physically and emotionally react to stress. We will close by discussing how children build social networks and the importance of teaching children the skill of identifying the strengths of other children who can uplift them during various day-to-day experiences. Sarita, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Sarita, we are going to get started talking about resilience, but before we get started on that, can you tell the audience a little bit about you?
Sure. So I have my own consulting firm here in Chicago, largely focused on leadership and emotional intelligence. And that happens in a number of different environments, in organizations, on teams, with individuals in coaching. Do a lot of work around emotional intelligence. And my passion is turning insight into opportunity for change.
Sarita, thanks so much for joining us today on E2E to share some of your knowledge and wisdom with us. So, talking about reality testing, what is reality testing?
So the thing about what is your reality, two things can happen to the same people and they can experience it absolutely differently. Mm. What's the quote by Aldous Huxley? Experience is not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens to you. And if you think about how two different people inside of the same experience can have two extremely different reactions to it, it's incredible, right? It's so different. If you think about that, what makes the experience so different for one person than for another person?
Yeah, what does
How
make
is it so
different? Yeah.
So I've always been curious about this. And one of the things that I learned about early on was this idea of reality testing. And there's so much, we could talk about this forever, just this one topic.
Right? Okay.
There's so much research about how do people gauge what is real and what isn't real and how do people develop resilience. But when it starts with reality testing, it comes down to your attitude. And very early on, Martin Seligman, who's this guy who has so much, written a ton of books on positive psychology and kind of started the whole positive psychology movement before, like, you know, the secret guy and all those other people. It was the real guy, right?
Okay.
And so he talked about the difference between optimism and pessimism as a driver in attitude that helps with reality testing. Because if you are grounded in an optimistic attitude, a belief that the world, things will work out, not naive Pollyanna, but a belief that things could possibly go your way, you will have a driver that operates that way. If you're a glass half full person, you know, then you're expecting potentially for things not to work out. And what Martin Seligman talks about is the way that you use your optimism or your pessimism drives your reality testing. So for example, if you're an optimist, whatever this thing has happened to you is temporary, right? It's a temporary downturn. Hmm. It's a misfortune is something that will change. Whatever has happened to you, whether it's a small event or a traumatic event, it's situational. It's not long-term doom and gloom. And this is even in people who have repeated trauma, children, right?
Yeah.
That tend to be kind of, I don't want to say hardwired for optimism, but maybe, you know, they
just have that outlook even as a young child.
Yeah, yeah. Like they just have that kind of, they have that outlook. Hmm. But also that they don't automatically take it all on themselves. They don't shoulder the blame, right? Whereas people that are pessimistic, they have to kind of, there's three different things that he talks about. Like one, which is assessing permanence, that things are not permanent, that they're temporary. And then assessing pervasiveness, that one thing does not mean everything in your world is just going to fall down, right? Like catastrophizing, you know, if I trip, then, you know, I'm never going to walk again because I'm just that whole, we all do it.
Yeah.
Some version of it, right? Like
you,
there's a rainy day and you think, oh my God, I'm never going to find a parking spot downtown, or I'm going to miss my bus or my L or whatever. Right. And then it turns into this, like, I have a horrible day and I'm going to lose my job. Right. We all go down that rabbit hole sometimes. And then the last thing is that personalization, that when children in particular, because you learn this at such a young age, when you think everything is your fault, then you kind of lose some of the opportunity to build resilience.
What do you mean when you think everything? So, like, if you had a young student who maybe was living in poverty or there was domestic abuse in the home, are you saying that, like, the child might take that on as that being their fault?
Yeah, that my father is hitting my mother because he wants her attention and he doesn't want her to play with me.
Okay.
And so it's my fault that he's hitting her because he wants to play with her.
Gotcha.
He doesn't want her to play with me. And he saw her playing with me and he got jealous. I mean, they can't use the word jealous, right? They can't put it in those words.
Right.
But that's kind of the thought, right?
Yeah. So even young children, they already almost are hardwired or taught to look at situations in different ways.
Depending on, I think it's a combination of hardwired, but I also think it's that nature nurture battle, right?
Yeah.
That if you can be hardwired for optimism and grow up in extenuating, horrific circumstances, yet, you know, if those don't break you per se, you can kind of work through that in a certain way where you maintain what you might have had on the front.
So can we take this back to a classroom setting? Let's say that you have two students who have a disagreement in the classroom, and there's two kids watching this disagreement.
Yeah.
How might one student who's, like, more on the optimistic side take this? Like, what does that look like for those two types of thinkers?
So the optimistic person sees the disagreement and thinks, well, they're going to be friends tomorrow, so I'm not going to worry about it. They always fight. You know, they just fight. That's how it goes. Tomorrow they'll be friends and it'll be fine. Someone on the pessimistic side will think, you know what, I think that person said something similar to me yesterday. That's why they don't like me either. I think they're fighting, and I think they're thinking that same thing about me, and that's why they're probably not going to be my friend. And that's why I don't think I'm going to talk to them unless they talk to me, because I don't think they want to be my friend anymore. It had absolutely nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, it's about them. And this is different than someone who is really self-involved. It's not a person who is self-involved. This is a person who just takes on so much responsibility, so much more personalization.
That sounds exhausting.
Of course it sounds exhausting.
Yeah.
Because it is exhausting. Imagine, and as a kid, you can't name that. You don't understand what it
is.
No. So you're just trying to figure out, why does everyone hate me? Right? And
then
you wonder, like, the kid who's sitting by themselves, you know, people think, oh, they're not social. Well, they're dying to be social. They just think that nobody wants to play with them, right? They just think nobody likes them. Nobody understands them. Nobody gets them, right?
So if I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, if I was a teacher listening to this, I would be having major aha moments right now about just the personalities and knowing the different kids in my class and thinking about, like, how are they wired and do they tend to go one way or the other when they think about things. So if I'm a teacher, I mean, could I name this? Could we talk about this in my classroom? Like, how would you address this with young kids and help them learn about even their own metacognition and thinking?
I think that I would help them. I would put it in their language. Like, maybe have them talk about sunny days and rainy days. You know, does it feel like a sunny day today or does it feel like a rainy day? What is it in you today that feels like you have power and potential to think about making your day great? And what is it about, I think there's something too about when you're feeling pessimistic, that you feel you have absolutely no control over things, you feel passive. And so for those kids that are feeling more rainy day-ish, to say, how can you bring in the sun? You know, how could you add sun to your day to day? Is there anything that you have the power to do? You know, those kids aren't playing with you. Can you walk up to one of those children and say, I like what you're playing. Can I join? Is there something that I can do? I'm actually really super good at kickball. So if I come and join your team, I can kick that ball and I bet we could win.
Yeah.
Right?
Or start the kickball game themselves too, right?
Right. Who wants to play?
Yeah. But I like what you just said about the power, that knowing what they can have control of. I don't think kids, first of all, they can't even use half the language we're talking about, but they do understand the cause and effect of actions a lot of times. So talking through them, what do you have control over that you can go to that boy and say, let's start a kickball game? And what don't you have control over?
Well, and don't you think that children just want control of their worlds?
Yes.
You know, and I'm thinking about even this morning trying to help my daughter get dressed for school. And I was like, okay, remember, it's a gym day. She comes out in a sequin sweatshirt and a skirt. And she was like, yeah, Mom, it's a gym day. And she had this little smile on her face, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, is that comfortable? And she's like, really, really comfortable. And I was like, okay, you got it, right? But she's trying it out.
She wants
control of, at the very least, what she wears. And she lives in a non-chaotic environment.
Yeah.
Imagine children want any bit of control that they can gain, right? Any small bit they can gain.
Today's episode is sponsored by Conover Innovative Consulting Group. Visit www.conoverinnovativeconsulting.com to learn more about the services we provide, including professional development for teachers, consultative services for school districts and school leaders, and for education companies. You can also find photos and videos and artifacts from Educators to Educators podcast and learn more about our guest. Do you think kids lose hope that they're going to get that control after a while, maybe? If there is a lot of that chaos or that... How do kids handle when they're faced with all of that chaos? Do they go into themselves? I'm sure every kid's wired differently.
Well, now we're kind of talking about stress management, right?
Yeah.
So how one child handles stress is different from how another child handles stress. And I think that there's a couple things involved in that. One is, do they see stress as being something bad, or do they see stress as being something good? There's so much research out there that we see stress as this terrible thing that we can't control in our lives, right?
Yep.
But there's a lot of, you know, any of the TED Talks from Jane McConigal, Kelly McConigal, the How to Make Stress Your Friend, Super Better that Jane McConigal came up with, a Harvard Business Review article on stress, is that actually stress can be good for you. It can make you productive. It can help you engage in a different way. And when people talk about conflict, they say, if there's not enough stress involved in the conflict, you won't care enough to be engaged, right? So there has to be a certain optimal level of stress to get people engaged. If kids don't care how they do in school, they won't perform, right? Like, if there's no impetus of, hey, I get a check or a star, or I don't get my clip moved down, or whatever system the teacher uses.
Yep.
If there's no stress, then there's no engagement, right? So however that child looks at what stress is can help determine how they'll respond to what happens in the classroom, and even from the teacher. If you think about, there's so many different kinds of teachers. There are teachers who are a little bit more soft-spoken. There are those who are very loving. And every teacher, especially, you know, the class size, depending on how many kids you have in the class, some of them have to yell a little bit more, right? And let's use yelling as an example.
Okay.
So some children grow up in a home where there's lots of yelling. And so that's normal for them.
Yes.
It doesn't stress them out at all. Other children that never hear yelling, they hear someone yelling and it causes them to kind of panic a little.
Mm-hmm.
And feel uncomfortable. So every child can experience stress differently. Where the teacher can help children think about stress is, you know, how can you use this as something productive? So we were talking about those two TED Talks. One was called How to Make Stress Your Friend by Kelly McConigal, and the other one was by Jane McConigal, and it was something, I think it was called Super Better.
Okay.
But the Super Better one, and they're twin women. I mean,
cool.
Kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
So the Jane McConigal was talking about, she had a traumatic brain injury and she was trying to improve her brain. I mean, she was just basically trying to get through it. She came up with this video game that helped her, that she thought was going to help her in certain ways, but what helped her was she was more connected to people. And so she kind of found the same result as her sister in her study, who talked about stress and the release of oxytocin, that this physiologically makes us want to connect with people.
Okay, so there's two women.
Yeah.
They both did a study.
Yeah.
One herself had a brain injury.
Yes.
She started this like video game for brain injury, and so what she found through that was what? Through that study.
She found that when people went on to play that video game, it wasn't actually the video game, it was the connection with other people.
So there was some kind of social networking or something she was able to do on there?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, amazing.
That's what made people feel better, was the connection to other people.
Interesting.
Independently, her, this is where people, the twin stuff is real, right?
Yeah.
Independently, her sister did the study on stress, and it was an 8-year longitudinal study, about 30,000, it's a real strong sample group, right? About how people respond to stress. And two things she talked about: if people thought stress was bad,
okay,
they had a 43% chance, a higher percent chance of dying from something stress-related in their life. Scary, wow. Right?
Yeah.
And the other thing was that when this hormone is released, oxytocin, it actually makes you reach out to people. I don't care if you're introverted, extroverted, it doesn't matter.
Wait,
right?
What? So this chemical, so you go through something traumatic.
Yep.
And then you get this chemical released, or there's stress, and then you have this chemical released in your body. Sorry, yep. I'm putting this in my everyday terms.
Yep.
And so that chemical makes you want to reach out to people?
Yes. It's a stress hormone. It's part of our body's stress response. It's called oxytocin, and it motivates you to seek support from other people.
That our bodies blow me away sometimes. They're like that, how that
machines.
Even, yes,
I mean that. Like, there's no accident about how everything works. In Kelly McGonigal's TED Talk, she talks about how simply shaking a person's hand for 6 seconds. Increases. Listen to the siren.
Yeah, sorry guys, we're in Chicago. We're gonna pause for 1 second as the fire trucks go by. I don't know about you, but it's making me feel a little stressful.
You know what?
Too a little stressed out.
I'm so used to this because I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
In my office.
Gotta live a big urban city.
So, in her research, she said if just shaking someone's hand for 6 seconds raises the amount of this hormone in your body and makes you want to connect with other people more.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is crazy.
So continuing with this idea of oxytocin, the other thing that happens with stress is that stress gives us more access to our compassion. And part of, I think, what happens with children, if you notice, when one child falls down, I think the natural thing that you see with other children is, are you okay? You know, they walk over, whether you're friends with someone or not. If you see someone fall down the stairs, adults, like, I mean, I fall down on the street all the time. Nobody, right? Like,
just so you know, I would run and help you. I'm a helper.
I know you would. I know you would. I trust it.
But absolutely. Adults must lose that somehow. No, but you're absolutely right about kids.
No, adults lose it because of self-consciousness. What is that person going to think of me if I go over and help them? Maybe they don't want my help. Maybe they think that I'm a weirdo. Maybe they think that I'm trying to get something from them or steal their purse. Right?
Yeah.
Children aren't as kind of jaded or biased about things. They just want to help each other.
Wow.
So if you think about that idea that stress kind of gives us more access to our compassion, when a child is stressed, they actually want to connect more with other children.
Mm.
And so if you see a child alone on the playground, they want, even if they say they don't want to play with other to kids, of course they do.
Yeah.
They just feel kind of alone and rejected, and they're scared to ask.
Yeah.
And so they don't ask. But what's happening in the context of our idea of resilience, these kids have less of an opportunity to build resilience. Because when there's that release in your body of oxytocin, you want to form connections. And if you don't have a chance to do that, it's a missed opportunity. So if you think about the timeout or the, you know, corner, go sit by yourself. That person, even if they did something highly annoying, this child, even if they hurt another child, let's say accidentally or on purpose, what they want more than anything is for someone to reach out to them, and they want to reach out to someone else. Now, I'm not talking about kids with autism or Asperger's, because I think those are all very, very different systems that come into play. They have different, you know, they're challenges are different.
Yes.
But I'm talking about high functioning kids that have, that are not on the spectrum, that have access to things differently. I will say though, I have even seen children with autism respond differently when people respond to them in kind. So there is something during a stressful situation, if you give a child an opportunity to connect, like the Peace Corner, right?
Yeah, that concept was, yeah, I like that.
That Mrs. Ward came up with. Then those two children that are involved in that stressful situation have an opportunity to reach out to each other to seek to understand.
So what Sarita's speaking about is in her daughter's classroom, they had this
last year, they had
a Peace Corner. So then the students could go there, and did they ask for a certain individual, or how did they know who to talk to in that Peace Corner?
Well, it was someone that they were in a conflict with. or someone they were having a hard time with that day, or someone that was mad at them, or they got in a fight with, or something. There's some event leads to the piece, which you can imagine happens all day long in second grade,
there's always tension.
Yeah, of course. And so those two, or sometimes it would be Mrs. Ward that would say, like, you have to go to the peace corner. But basically work it out, right?
Yeah.
So the kids would go to the peace corner, hopefully. And I think she was also teaching them tools of, like, here's how I felt. What did you feel? This is what I meant. This is what I heard. And apologizing. But all the while, even if they're mad at each other, if they're stressed, they want to connect to each other. Most of the time when kids are upset with each other, ultimately they just want to be understood and they want to connect, right?
Yeah.
So that really was the premise of this Peace Corps. I'm guessing, at least.
Whether she knew it or not.
Whether she knew it or not. No, she's a brilliant teacher. But helping people really connect in the pursuit of understanding each other.
Yeah.
And these kids, giving them an opportunity, instead of isolating them, building on that need for social connection and teaching them tools to work it out.
You were talking about the being an optimist or kind of being a pessimist in these situations. What I kind of like about this Peace Corner is, let's say you have one kid who's an optimist and another who looks at this in a more pessimistic way, and that giving them the chance to talk it out and share each other's points of view is probably good for both sides to understand how people handle stress, how they react and how they see things, to see each other's perspectives.
Yeah. And also, sometimes I think we do this as adults, and I see kids do this too. Sometimes as an optimist, you kind of carry the optimism for the other person, right? And you let them borrow a little bit of it. Yeah. And I've seen kids do this when I, you know, volunteer in my daughter's classroom or even in different situations with children. Say, I know that you don't believe it's true, but I know it's true. So let's try to talk about it, or let's try to understand it. You know, I believe in this or I believe in that. And that's why I think we can have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
I know you didn't mean it, you know? And even if the person's really frustrated, said, yes, I did mean it. I wanted to say it, right? Like, they're just not there yet. And we've all been there where we're just, like, going down fighting, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But with these kids, they're still mad, or but they haven't accessed the compassion yet. And think about kids who are just constantly inundated with stress, right? How much support and compassion they need.
Yeah.
And that leads to this whole idea of support networks, right?
Yes, I love this idea.
So what we were talking about earlier is this idea of, we as adults understand the importance of a social network. We've talked about everyone having their own personal board of directors. You know,
yes.
I have my own personal board of directors. I have people that I go to for mom things, as a small business owner, as I have people that are other psychologists. I have people that are, you know, work in corporations that I work with. So all different kinds of, I don't want to say verticals because that's so stale, but sections of your life, right?
Yeah. That we choose.
That we choose.
By the way, that we know, because you've helped me build my board of directors in my life. And they are, we know the right people to choose as adults on that board of directors.
As adults.
Yes.
As children, we know who we like, right? Or we know whom we admire.
Yeah.
And usually you like people that make you feel good. And you admire people that make you feel good. And so as children, you know, I know that sometimes they put kids together in pods, right? Especially in the larger classes. I think my daughter has like 5 or 6 kids in her little pod. And if teachers could get strategic at the beginning of the year and pay attention to, I mean, these kids come in with friends already, right? They have friends, they have kids they've been hanging out with, whether you're a new kid or an old kid, or like you've been around for a couple of years. Or, if they could think about putting kids together that could lean on each other during stressful times, during fun times, and the idea of a peace corner, but also having a support corner, where you have children that volunteer to give other people support for the day. Mm-hmm. You've got one kid per day that says, I want to be a person to support people in the classroom, right?
Yeah.
And if someone's having a hard day, they can say, here's why I'm having a hard day. And it wouldn't even matter what that child says back.
No.
Just to have someone sitting there saying, I'm sorry you're having a hard day. And that's where you teach children how to say, I'm so sorry you're feeling that way. And that goes back to empathy, what you were talking about last week or the week before, right?
Yeah.
Helping children have empathy. They just don't know how to articulate it necessarily, right? They know they feel badly for someone. They know they feel a certain way with someone, but they don't know how to say, I'm so sorry you're going through that.
Yeah.
They just say, I'm sorry.
And even, okay, so I'm thinking about in my classroom, even the kids that gave me a lot of trouble as a teacher,
yep.
you know, who, by the way, always ended up being like some of my favorite children by the end of the year, but the ones that maybe just don't have those skills,
yeah.
They find so much joy by being given the opportunity to be that person for someone else.
That's right.
Right? That, like, I can sit down and be there for someone else is so empowering for them.
Well, don't we just want to be useful? I mean, I forget which one of the TED Talks it was. Maybe it was Kelly McGonigal, but she talked about chasing meaning is so much more important than avoiding discomfort.
Chasing meaning is so much more important than avoiding discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you think about that, trying to understand the feelings, attitudes, experience of someone else, children want to do that for each other. And every child wants to feel important and valued and loved, right?
Yeah.
And as adults, we all want that too.
Yeah.
But allowing kids to be involved in a support network to each other and for each other, because basically they're growing up together, right? They're,
yep.
Right, they're STEM and they're learning, but essentially, you know, the social emotional stuff is as important as fractions and estimating and yes. all the stuff that they're learning.
Right? Yeah. And when we were talking to Katie Lynch in the entrepreneurship episode, we were talking about how some of the most successful business leaders, entrepreneurs, their social emotional intelligence was so valuable to mm-hmm. their success, not the fractions, not the, you know, and I have to say, we have to talk about this stuff in our classroom. And I think you said something brilliant that I wish we would have were recording earlier, but that how can we teach our own kids that we have, plus, you know, as educators, how do you teach kids to look at someone and say, oh, my friend Kim, she is really good at calming people down when they're hurt. She's going to be that friend I go to. Joey, he is so good when people are getting ramped up and they're getting excited and they're being too loud. He's really good at like getting everyone to chill. And as an adult, as I'm building my own personal board of directors, I can look at an adult and be like, this person's really good at analyzing data. He can help me with that. Or this person's going to be good when I'm feeling like I don't want to do this anymore and rally me up. So I think talking to kids about knowing each other's strengths and what they're good at, it's really a cool concept.
Well, and this is the friend I go to when I need a little bit of energy. And this is the friend too when I just want to sit and have some quiet. And this is the friend that I go to when I feel like being silly and experimenting. And this is the friend that I go to when I feel sad and I know that they're going to say something positive. And I mean, essentially, they're building their network. And
yeah.
If they learn how to do that in the classroom, no, and maybe they're already learning how to do that. They're not naming it as a
yes.
network. They're saying, these are my friends, you know. And I think this happens at all ages with boys and girls. But, you know, I hear my daughter's best friend is this girl one day. And then the next week, they're like, no, not anymore, right?
Yeah.
But that was maybe first grade. Now the players are more consistent.
Yeah.
Right? And so the people that are really, she's developing these trusting bonds with, she's building her team, right?
Yep.
And I don't even think she's doing it on purpose, but for those children who don't have the kind of influences, who aren't having the conversations at the end of every day about, tell me a good thing about your day, tell me something you could have done better, right? What do you hope for tomorrow? Teachers can help them think about these things. Well, who do you go to? You know, you're not feeling very good right now. Who might you want to sit with for the next 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And helping them think through, like, well, let's see, who makes me feel good?
Yeah.
Who makes me laugh? I want to laugh right now.
Yeah.
I had a terrible night last night. I just want to laugh. Who do I want to sit with?
Yeah.
And the person who's making them laugh feels great because they're making them laugh. They see the person's shifting mood, right? They feel amazing. Mm-hmm. And then the kid is laughing and they think, well, this person cares enough about me to try and make me laugh. Isn't that great? And then both, it's a win-win, right?
It's a
both
total
kids
win-win.
Are excited because there's some service to others. And that, oh, that's another thing that was in one of these TED Talks. It was talking about people who give to others actually are healthier, that feel better, and they're happier. And I've read this before in a different study. And oh, gosh, happiness is the big thing right now that everyone's studying, right?
Yeah.
That people that serve others, that give to others, tend to be the happiest. If that's true, let's help our kids learn how to do that early.
Absolutely.
Right? How do you help other people so you can feel good about yourself?
But you're so right. Kids want to help.
They want to help.
And kids are naturally doing so much of this. I think my big takeaway from us talking today is let's help them put language around it. Let's help them identify that they're doing it, that they're being a helper, or that they're giving that social support. Let's help them identify building a network. Who are the good people for you when you need, you know, a high five or whatever? Like, the kids are instinctively doing this. We just need to, as adults, highlight it, put a spotlight on it, and talk about it.
And I think especially the ones that are struggling, not to isolate them.
Yeah.
And help them learn how to make and foster connections so when they are struggling, they can get what they need.
And what they need sometimes might be the adult in the room, but if I were going to put my money on it, they want to connect with the other kids.
They just want to feel like a normal kid, because who knows what happened to them the night before or that morning?
Yeah.
Who knows if they ate breakfast or lunch?
Yeah.
Right? Like, who knows what their situation is or what they're going home to that night?
Yeah.
But they just want to be seen and heard and valued and be in relationship with someone. And to give something to someone else is a great gift for someone who feels like they have nothing to give, right?
Yeah. I'm thinking a great way to close this is being a teacher is extremely stressful. And the mission behind my podcast and the real reason I'm doing this is to shine a spotlight on good teaching and learning happening across the nation. And teaching is so stressful, and there's just even more and more pressure that is, you know, being put on teachers. So resiliency in teachers. If you were going to say one piece of advice to teachers of how they can themselves make it through that long school year and stay resilient in their profession and personally in the classroom?
I'd say three things.
Okay.
First, self-awareness. Know yourself. Emotional intelligence is the win, right? The more you know yourself, the more you can self-modulate and help other children self-modulate themselves. The second is self-care. Teaching is the hardest thing on this planet, I think.
I agree.
It's the hardest job. And it's a thankless job, because you're done at 6 o'clock, and then your life happens and you're grading papers on the weekends and everything, right?
Yep.
So you have to make time for yourself, whether that's going for a run in the morning or, you know, spending time with friends and family. And that's the third thing, is that social network. The same thing we're talking about with the kids. You have to have your people that you can go to, people that you can call and just say, you are never going to believe what happened today.
Yeah.
And you'll laugh about it for 5 minutes, and maybe you'll cry about it for 5 minutes, but you'll say, okay, now I can move on because I had this conversation. And you have to know who your board of directors is, you know, who you can go to. So the teachers need to model that care by doing it themselves, right? And then teaching it to their students.
I love that. What a great way to end. Dr. Sarita Bakuni, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
I already can tell that I'm going to ask you to come back for another episode one day, but I've been mesmerized the whole time you're talking. Thank you so much for
your
time.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Educators to Educators. I want to hear from you. What topics do you want me to cover? What do you think of the show? You can reach me at carrie@ccincg.com. or visit my website, www.conoverinnovativeconsulting.com. It's been a pleasure to have you this week, and until next time, keep on teaching on.